Hey everyone, welcome in and thanks for joining another episode of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, inside TCO Studios at a snowy winter park on this
aptly
Wednesday
named
afternoon.
Yeah. Winter park.
Yes, very aptly named.
I'm sure that's park. The first time that joke has ever been made.
Probably not, but it's still a good one, especially today. 2 days in a row I've had to shovel my driveway before I left.
Ugh.
And I hate it. And I won't have to do it on Friday because I'll be in Las Vegas.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, actually, I heard there's supposed to be a big winter storm headed that way. So,
yeah, right. That's going to dissipate before it gets there. I'll be out in the middle of the desert. That's the voice of producer Nate Vaughn. He's joining me as he usually does for this week's Wobcast. We have a ton of stuff coming up in the show today. We are going to talk about the playoffs, the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll preview some of those games. We'll make our picks. We have a cool conversation with Tom Pelissero of the USA Today. He's local. He used to cover the Vikings for a number of different outlets here in Minneapolis. Now he's national. He covers the NFL.
It's big
for
time.
For the USA Today. He is big time, and he came into our studio. So we're going to share our conversation that we had with him, with you, later on in the show. And we'll also address some fan mail in the show.
You can also see that interview on Vikings.com, the video version.
Right.
We used cameras as well.
Right, we did. We used a lot to capture that conversation, so you can listen to it right here on the Wobcast, and you can watch it plus listen to it on Vikings.com. The first thing, though, that we're going to talk about is something that we're going to be talking about for like the next 5 months, the Vikings offensive line.
Yeah.
And how the team can address it. This is a topic that will surround the Vikings for the entirety of the offseason, something we're familiar with because that was the case last year too, where the Vikings signed two offensive linemen in free agency, Alex Boone and Andre Smith, and they used a fourth-round draft pick on an offensive lineman, Willie Beavers. So the Vikings went through a lot of turmoil along the offensive line. They even hired a new offensive line coach last offseason, Tony Sperano. So they went through turmoil, and they went through a lot of different rotations. Eight different starting offensive lines last season, and really nine, I'm counting, because I count two in week 17 because TJ Clemmings got hurt early in the game, and Rashad Hill basically had to finish the game. I mean, he played more
most
than three
game
quarters. Yeah. So I'm counting it as nine different starting offensive lines for the Vikings last year. They were hit hard with injuries, and then they just didn't have consistent play. So I don't think that happened because they didn't value the offensive line last offseason. As we said, they signed two starters. They hired a new offensive line coach. They used a draft pick. So this isn't a matter of the Vikings not addressing it and neglecting the position. This is a matter of some bad luck and a lack of consistency. So how do we fix it this year? Well, everyone's going to look at the draft again and free agency again. That's how everyone thinks that you can fix personnel issues or address personnel issues. Well, there's a third way that people forget about, and it's developing your own players. Yes, you can go out and sign a free agent. Yes, you can use a first or second round draft pick on a plug-and-play guy. But if you want to sustain long-term success, you're going to have to find a way to develop your own players. The Vikings defense has been good 3 years in a row. A big part of that, developing players. Look at Danielle Hunter, a third-round pick. Stephon Diggs on offense, a fifth-round pick. Sticking with the defensive theme, Everson Griffin, fourth-round pick. Shamar Stephens, seventh-round pick. So these are players that were not household names. They were not heralded players in college, but the Vikings took them and developed them. The Vikings are going to have to do that on the offensive line, Nate. So you have a list of players that we've already acquired, that are already in our village, that in addition to signing guys and drafting guys, these guys are already here and they will compete for time along the offensive line. So let's talk about these guys.
Yeah, let's go right down the line. We'll start with Rashad Hill, the guy you mentioned who played most of the game at left tackle against the Bears in week 17. What does Rashad Hill do well from his from his mountain of tape you have
right
on him?
Right. Well, with not a lot to go off of, just three quarters of one game, I think he made a good accounting of himself in week 17. I mean, the offensive line allowed zero sacks in week 17, and we ran for 4.6 yards per carry.
It was a good showing.
I'd say that's good. Yeah. And not one game does a season make, not three quarters does an evaluation make, but so far so good for Rashad Hill. He's 6'6", like 315, so he's got the profile of a guy who, you know, of an NFL body.
Right.
The Vikings got him off the Jaguars practice squad on November 15th, so they haven't had him for very long, but I think he has some promise.
All right, let's move into Willie Beavers, a draft pick from last year's draft.
Fourth-round pick out of Directional Michigan College, Central or Western?
I believe it's Western.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think people are like, geez, what the heck, Willie Beavers, like, not a great season. Okay, yeah, I mean, he didn't get to play a lot, and he was on the practice squad at some points of the season, so yeah. But, I mean, he's from Western Michigan, and it was a fourth-round pick. I don't think we thought he was going to come in and steal a starting spot and be, you know, an all-pro in his first year.
So, not to slight Western Michigan, a new,
right, no offense.
A new Golden Gopher head football coach, P.J. Fleck.
P.J. Fleck, or Joe Staley, who I think is from a Directional Michigan college and is a good starting left tackle.
There we go.
So
let's make that connection right now and stick with it.
Okay, right, okay. Comparison.
We could ask Coach Fleck what he thinks of Willie.
We could. He probably would have an idea.
He'd probably take up half the Wobcast talking about
how he's
from
elite.
What I heard of him, of his pressers.
Right. He likes to talk.
He does.
Right. So let's pump the brakes on the stoning of Willie Beavers, and let's give him a chance to develop.
TJ Clemmings, he's played basically two full seasons now. So fans, you know, a lot of fans think they have a good read on him. A lot of the Vikings staff probably has a good read on him. But what can we look for from TJ Clemmings going forward?
Let's admit that there have been some plays that TJ would like to have back. That happens to young offensive tackles, young offensive linemen. The thing I like is he's like 23 years old only, and he's only played offensive line for 4 years because he went to Pittsburgh as a highly regarded basketball player that came there to play football. He was a standout basketball player in high school. Went to Pittsburgh to play football as a defensive lineman. They transitioned him to offensive line halfway through his career at Pittsburgh. So he's got 2 years at Pittsburgh playing offensive line, and now he's got 2 years here. He's 23-ish years old. And as a young 20s third-year player, he already has 30 starts under his belt. So I think there's something there to develop. I don't know if it's as a starter. I don't know what position. I don't even know what side. But I think you can develop him into something along the offensive line.
Let's move to the middle. Nick Easton stepped in when Joe Berger was out for a few games there towards the end of the season.
Right.
By all accounts, seemed to play pretty well.
Yeah, and Nick Easton was a guy who in his rookie preseason campaign, a lot of teams around the league were like, oh, maybe this guy, you know, maybe he has a shot. And I think it was with Baltimore where he did that. And then San Francisco wound up getting him for what they thought would be for the season. But then we traded Gerald Hodges, and we wanted Nick Easton as a part of that trade along with the draft pick. And so Nick Easton is here, and he was thrust into action this year because of injury to our interior offensive line. Joe Berger went down, Nick Easton went in. Joe Berger came back, but then Brandon Fusco couldn't play, so Joe Berger went to right guard, and Nick Easton stayed in the lineup. And again, as we would say with Rashad Hill, limited sample size, but there were some good things. So I don't think you give up on Nick Easton. I think you bring him back, and you keep developing him.
Jeremiah Searles proved to be an important part of the line at a handful of different positions throughout the season.
Another player we got from another team in a trade, Jeremiah Searles, came from San Diego. And, you know, he's got the size and I think the athleticism where you keep him and try to continue to develop him as a depth guy.
And finally, Zach Kerin saw some action when he was needed in spots.
You know, when we would bring in a sixth offensive lineman for some heavy personnel or jumbo or goal line personnel, he's the guy we would bring in when we were healthy. And so he's got some experience. Again, I put him in the category of Jeremiah Searles and Nick Easton. Not a guy that you look at right now as someone you're going to count on to start, but a guy who's done enough and has been around long enough to not give up on, and you want to keep developing him.
So, in summation, it's easy to point to the draft. It's easy to point to free agency, and those might be things that that Rick Spielman ends up looking at and doing. But also, we might have a lot to work with right here.
I think we have the chance to have some stuff to work with here. And you're right. We're not saying forget drafting a guy and forget signing a guy. Let's develop all of our guys. We're not saying that. We're just saying in addition to drafting someone and maybe signing a starter, also remember – let's develop our own guys and give those guys a chance because they know our team, we know them, and there is some value in that.
Offensive line, one of the main topics, one of the bigger topics of your conversation with Tom Pelissero the other day. What do you have to say to preview your little chat with Tom?
Yeah, well, you know, Tom did a good job, I thought, of, and you'll hear it because we're going to throw to this audio right now. He did a good job of towing the company line when he was in our studio and talking about the things that are great, but touching on some subjects that are going to be high profile and things that need to get better. So Tom can do that a little bit better than we can, you know, because he's going to take a down the middle approach and we're always going to promote and be positive. Tom took an objective look at our team and shared his thoughts. I thought it was really good. Some things I liked from what Tom said, he and I agree on Eric Kendricks and his future and what he's done and what he can do. And Tom believes, as I believe, that winning the division should be a goal of this team in 2017. Here is USA Today's Tom Pelissero chatting with us about the Vikings. Hey everyone, welcome into TCO Studios at Winter Park. Mike Wobshaw joined by Tom Pelissero of USA Today. Tom's our friend. He usually joins us at the Combine, but we've roped him into coming into the studio in advance of the Combine.
First time I've ever been invited here, so thanks.
You're welcome.
Finally.
What do you think?
It's nice. Yeah. It's a lot better than the rest of the building.
Yeah, well, we like it here. We do a lot of work here, and we're going to do some work with you right now. We're going to talk about the Vikings. Let's start with the 2016 season. You went to a handful of games. We were talking earlier. You went to the Carolina game and then a bunch of games at U.S. Bank Stadium. So a lot happened for the Vikings in 2016, but first, U.S. Bank Stadium. What did you think of our new building?
No, I think it's fantastic. I really did. And I was skeptical about it, too. When you initially going into it, you see it from the outside. It looked a little bit different seeing it from the highway side than I think I expected. You see it from downtown, though. It's very cool. And then on the inside, I mean, it's as intimate of a venue as I've seen in the NFL, having been to just about, if not all, stadiums at this point, just because of the way that the corners are so tight up on it. It's a big stadium that doesn't feel big. The way that the sun comes in, I had concerns, I'm sure, like a lot of people about, okay, are you going to get weird shadows? Are you going to get strange, you know, some of the lines on the field? You really didn't have that, you know, and then when you got a nice day in late October, early November, and you open up those doors and it feels like an outdoor stadium, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and the first regular season game at U.S. Bank Stadium was a big one. It was the Sunday night game against the Packers. I presume that you were at that game. And for the Vikings, they win that game 17-14. They're 2-0 on the season. It was Sam Bradford's first start. At that point in time, the Vikings were rolling.
Bradford played unbelievably in that game. I mean, that's the part that everybody forgets, I think, when they look back upon the season. And you know, a lot of people talk about his completion percentage and then the number of short passes. And some of that stuff's valid. But if you remember that game, he was throwing the football down the field. He got rocked a bunch of times. The protection was not very good, but he kept standing in there, taking the hits, getting up again. I know for a fact that won him some respect within that locker room. I mean, his very first start to take that kind of pounding, to play at the level he did, on national TV against the division foe. I think that sort of changed the dynamic a little bit. Now, as the season played out, though, too, the way that the Vikings started, some of the things they overcame, even some of those issues like the protection that when they were winning were still there and you could see them, I think that that cast the season in a little bit different light than when you take it in totality, it looks a little bit different.
Well, yeah, and I think we'll get to kind of some things that happened later in the season here in a minute. But sticking with the Sam Bradford theme, and, you know, you've covered the league for a long time, and to see a quarterback join a new team. No,
just,
I'm saying your experience.
All right, I'm just checking. Yeah,
your experience.
All right, that's fine.
To see a quarterback join a new team 8 days in front of the season, and then to play the way he did, that was really remarkable, I think.
It's very unusual. I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to find a lot of situations where the starting quarterback is traded for on cut down day and then has all the work that he had to do. Now, he had some familiarity because he had Pat Shurmur here who he had played with before, but you're still talking about a different scheme, new receivers, figuring out not just the language of the offense, but getting the rhythm and timing and tempo to be able to play at a high level. He kind of came shot out of a can in that Packers game. And yeah, if you look over the body of work this season, and I know that the wins and losses did not end up being there, and I know that they had to play a certain style because, let's face it, the offensive line was really banged up from the start. They built it last offseason. They were very happy with the depth they had, and then because of retirements and injuries and other things, they ended up playing with some guys who were not, frankly, ready to play yet or shouldn't have been in the lineup in the spots that they were. That's just how football works sometimes. For Bradford to be able to operate within that offense at the level he did. Again, taking the totality, everybody's going to have bad plays throughout the course of a season. But yeah, I think that Bradford had a very solid year. He had a career year in a lot of different regards and showed that he's somebody that perhaps if he has an offseason to learn his receivers and can actually have a starting offensive line together, could be somebody you can win with.
Well, and the big criticism with Bradford during his career has been he gets hurt a lot. And he didn't get hurt this year. He played in every game he was asked to play in. And then he can't rise above inadequate play around him. And he did not play in front of an offensive line that was able to be consistent because of those injuries. So I think he kind of proved those naysayers wrong. We'll see what happens with him in 2017. Mike Zimmer has said that he's earned the right to be the starter. But with the offensive line injuries, it's unbelievable. They just kept happening to this team.
I mean, go back to if you're sitting there in June, July, and you're thinking, all right, who's the starting offensive line? You're going, it's Matt Khalil at left tackle, who played a couple of games and was already hurt and wasn't himself. You're thinking left guard is going to be Alex Boone, who did play the majority of the season. Center is a Joe Berger, John Sullivan competition. Yeah. Right guard is probably Mike Harris. And right tackle is either Andre Smith or Phil Loadholt. So I mean, you go down that list of names, who was left by the end of the season? Who was left by week four? They were challenged in a lot of regards. And that's not an excuse for the way that they played. Everybody in the league is going to have injuries. But in terms of offensive line injuries, Vikings were hit as hard as anybody. And that changed the way that they had to try to play offense.
I mean, in week 17, at one point in that game, it was Rashad Hill, Boone, Nick Easton, Berger, and Searles.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of these guys weren't second teamers in training camp, and now they're starting. But what do you think the Vikings can learn from that? You know, because it's not like...
Don't get hurt.
Well,
don't have everybody get hurt.
And that's not something you can really, try to do. They signed two starting caliber players in free agency along the offensive line last year. So it's not as if the Vikings ignored the offensive line last offseason. But what can they do this offseason to prevent that from happening again?
I don't know that you can prevent it, but they're going to have some decisions to make because Matt Khalil can be a free agent. Andre Smith was on a one-year deal. I know that they extended Joe Berger already. But you're looking, I think, at all the spots and trying to figure out how are you going to best put this together. I mean, the tackle spots have to be solidified. I think that, and I wouldn't even say that they would go back and change how they built the tackle depth because, again, you were thinking Phil Loadholt, worst-case scenario, on a minimum no-dollars-guaranteed type of a deal would be somebody who'd be your backup right tackle. I mean, that's a pretty good guy who started a ton of NFL games for you. I think that they're going to build the backup plan the same way that they have in the past. They've just got to hope that, you know, they're going to catch a little bit better luck, which, I mean, the bar is set pretty low on that right now.
Yeah. Defensively, what did you like about what the Vikings did in 2016?
Well, I think that the first 5 weeks of the season and going back to the tail end of the 2015 season, they were playing at as high of a level as anybody maybe this side of Denver. I mean, you look at the string of games where they didn't allow over 20 points or whatever the number was. It was fantastic. I think then, for whatever reason, they hit a little bit of a lull through the season. I think that they had a couple of games that they would really like to go back in time and play better. There were situations late in games. There were, you know, blown coverages and confusion at times. There were some strange things that I think that you're going to have to address going forward because those are, on some level, I think, programmatic things. I don't think there's any question that the talent is there. I mean, Harrison Smith gets banged up. There's another injury for you. But, you know, Xavier Rhodes, I think, has to be looked at as one of the huge bright spots through the course of the season. There's plays that he'd like to have back. You know, I think of the touchdown to Dez Bryant in the Dallas game. I mean, that's one where if Rhodes is playing the proper coverage, maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe that flips the entire game. But he's still a young player who's growing. I think he's going to get paid a ton of money in the offseason. You know, I think you've seen Trey Wayne start to take steps forward. They got a decision to make on Terrence Newman. You got Eric Kendricks, I think, was one of the undersold stories of the year. I mean, that guy showed at a position that, by the way, the Vikings didn't draft him to play. They were not projecting him to be their middle linebacker, but he's shown that he can be a really effective player there. And then Linval Joseph, Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter in year two being one of the top five sack guys in the league. No question the talent's there. But you'd like to see some of those young players play better. You'd like to see Anthony Barr have more splash plays than he did this season. I think that all those things, when they're examining the scheme and the personnel, the way all the parts fit together, the coaching staff, everybody's got to do better because they should, based on who they've got in-house, who they've got on the field, they should be a better defense than they were over the entirety of the 2016 season.
And isn't that a thing that people maybe don't talk a lot about, is you talk about free agent signings and draft picks, but development of your own players. That's a big part of the offseason. And you mentioned some young players like Danielle Hunter. They've done a great job with him so far, but now it's the Mackenzie Alexander, Jayron Kearse, maybe another step forward for Trey Waynes. That might be the next step for this defense.
They've spent a ton of resources in the defense through the draft. I mean, they have not gone out and spent big money. I'm trying to think of the last really big money free agent that they signed on defense. I mean, that is a homegrown core. Joseph got some money from him a couple of years ago. That's ended up being a value signing, in my opinion. I mean, tell me a better nose tackle in the NFL, a pure nose, 330-odd pound guy, as long as he's not trying to hurdle the long snapper. I mean, he's a really good player who can provide pass rush in addition to being able to stop the run. But, you know, the homegrown core with Griffin and Hunter and Kendricks and Smith and Rhodes and Wade, I mean, the list goes on. They've spent a lot of first and second round draft picks on these guys. That's how you want to build your defense, ideally. They're set up well. And I think they're really, I remember going back and talking to Mike Zimmer before the playoff game against Green Bay after last season. And he was saying he felt, 2016, the defense was going to be really good. But 2017 was where he thought everybody was going to come into their own. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see that transpire over the offseason. Now, what are the stories that you'll be chasing when it comes to the Vikings in the offseason? Give us a little offseason preview.
Well, I think that one thing that's got to be monitored is Teddy Bridgewater and where he's at from a health perspective. I mean, you knew going in, because this was such a major knee injury, it was not going to be 6-8 months he was back on the field. This was going to be something where they were really not going to have a great idea until coming out in April, May, June here of when Bridgewater can be back. I don't expect him to be ready to be on the active roster in week one. That would really surprise me, just because, again, it's a major knee injury. So I think that you're looking at, okay, how do they address the depth at that position? Are you comfortable with the options that you've got in-house, guys, a young player being able to step into that role, or do you have to go out and add yet another quarterback to that room? Adrian Peterson's another huge story, I think, going forward here. Peterson's had a really strange 3 years from 2014 where he really didn't play. 2015 came back, led the NFL in rushing, and then 2016, the injuries that he had from early on in that season. He's due an astronomical number, $18 million next year, but the intention was never for him to make that money. Both sides, the Vikings and his representation, knew that was just a placeholder where we're going to have to come back after the season and figure this out, and we'll see who ends up having the leverage. In this case, you'd have to say the Vikings have some leverage here, because Peterson, he's not going to go out and get a 5-year mega deal at this point. He's probably looking at a 1-year contract wherever he would go. So do the Vikings come back and offer him a deep pay cut, a guaranteed money, kind of like what they did with Chad Greenway a couple of times in the past? I could see them doing that. They've been very consistent that they want Adrian Peterson to retire as a Minnesota Viking. But does Peterson want that? Or does he want to say, I want to go someplace else and try to be a role player? Adrian's never going to agree to be a role player. Let me rephrase that. I'm going to go out there and take what money I can get and try to be part of a different championship team. Yeah. Peterson might do that. I think that that's one of the fascinating things. And then, of course, how do they address the offensive line? I mean, I think if you look at the defense, there's not a ton that you're really looking at that you need to do, right? I mean, Chad Greenway likely moving on. I'm never going to put it 100% with Chad, but likely retiring. So you're figuring out how are you going to replace that. But you've already drafted guys, you know, with Barr and Kendricks that you're thinking are going to come into some of those roles.
You have Terrence Newman, Captain Munnerlin, who are free agents, but you have young corners in place there. That could be something to watch, too, this offseason.
And I would think that those are two guys that I would guess are going to move on. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm sure the evaluation's still going on in this building right now. Yeah. But you've invested the resources there with Waynes and Rhodes. Again, Rhodes is going to have to get paid, but with Waynes and then with the young guy Alexander as well, you'd think that that's the future at that position. I think the offensive line, the quarterback position with Bridgewater and what they do for depth, and then Peterson, those are probably the three biggest things to me.
So with that being said, when you look ahead to 2017 offensively, What does the Vikings offense look like? We see it done a lot of different ways. You have Matt Ryan in Atlanta right now, and they're high scoring team number one in the NFL. Of course, we get an up close look at the Packers and how they run their offense every year. How are the Vikings going to operate offensively if they have it their way?
Well, I think that Pat Shurmur taking on the full-time role, in all likelihood, I think that that's going to have them trend toward Shurmur's background. I think that there is, he worked with Chip Kelly. I think that you're going to see some more tempo type of stuff. I think that the short passing game is always going to be what Bradford does well. I mean, you go back all the way through the course of his career, that's always been the sort of passer he is. He's not regarded within the league as the most accurate intermediate to deep passer. He has shown that he can connect on some of those throws when he needs to, but I think it's going to be a quick strike, up-tempo type of an offense. They've got to find ways to integrate some of their young receivers. I mean, Laquon Treadwell was really invisible through the course of the season. The entire draft class did not play a ton of snaps for them. So I think that some of that's going to have to be examined in terms of what they're able to get out of those guys. And I think that what ends up happening to running back is going to dictate some of this through, too. Don't forget, this could be a historically good and deep draft class at the running back position. I know that you got guys in-house already between Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata. Whatever happens with Peterson, you might feel like you can get some value on a player, not necessarily in the first round, but down the line through the second and the third and the fourth, who can be a difference maker for you at some point. I think that that's another thing that you have to examine in terms of what direction do you ultimately want to go.
Last one here. When the Vikings gather for training camp in 2017 and they put their goals up on the whiteboard, should winning the division be one of those goals?
I think that should always be one of the goals. And I think that, you know, if you rewind, and there's no excuses, okay? Everybody in the league has to deal with injuries and unusual situations. I think that the Vikings had as many of those as anybody in the league through the course of the season. I mean, we didn't even mention Norv Turner resigning when he did at midseason. That really does not happen a whole lot within the league. There were so many unique things that they had to go through. But I think that you also could see a path through which they could have been competing in the division this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the two Detroit games. You can't tell me that they can't go back and go, if we make one or two more plays, if we don't butcher the red zone on Thanksgiving, we maybe don't win those games. And now all of a sudden, it's us in the playoffs and not the Lions. So they're not that far off. I mean, I think there's going to be inevitably skepticism because Bradford has not been there before. He's not been into the postseason. Can you win with him? I came away from the season believing that you can, but you still have to have the structure around him. The Vikings need to get back to their identity, which is they need to be a defense-first team. They've got to run the football effectively, supplement in the passing game. I think that that's skewed for a variety of reasons, in part the offensive line injuries where they didn't have a running game for the vast majority of the season. If they can do that, if they can get back to being the type of team Mike Zimmer wants to have, certainly I think that that's within the realm of possibility.
Good stuff from Tom Pelissero. There's an off-season preview from Tom. You can catch more of his work on Twitter and, of course, at USA Today Sports. Tom's going to be all over the place. He'll be at the Combine, I would imagine the Super Bowl owners meeting, so maybe we'll run into him down the road.
All right, so a good combo between you and Tom Pelissero there. Yeah. So congrats on that.
Thank you. Mike? Well, he's easy to talk to. I've known him for a long time because he covered the Vikings for he's covered them for AM 1500. He's covered them for KFAN. And, you know, he's got a good handle on the league in addition to the Vikings. So he's easy to talk to, and we see him everywhere. We see him at the Combine, owners' meetings. So he's, you know, and he's a good dude. We like Tom.
Yeah, so thanks to Tom for battling the elements and, and making his way into
aptly
named Winter Park.
Right.
I had to do that one more
time.
Well done. Okay, let's move on to some fan mail.
Okay.
We got two questions. The first is from West Coast Viking.
My man Abe, he emails all the time.
All right. Mm-hmm. Abe says, just wanted to say that my favorite part of the season was acquiring Bradford and watching some top-notch quarterback play. It's been a while. Thielen is right there also. Great to see that man come to play. How nice to look forward to next season with a quarterback and good receivers that really give us a chance to make some noise. Get the O-line to average and find someone to run the rock, and with this defense, the Vikings will rule the world.
Okay.
So he's going
nothing can
straight
stop
to
us.
The top.
Yeah, and you know, Abe hit on what we talked about earlier, improving the offensive line. And so it's going to be a mission, part of the mission of this team in the offseason to improve the offensive line. And I agree with Abe that if that can get done, that is a big key to this team taking the next step. And look, you're not looking to be the, you know, Tennessee Titans, Buffalo Bills, Houston Texans of 2016, where they were the best rushing teams in the NFL. It'd be nice if you were. You're just looking for more balance. I think if you can get a better offensive line, you can achieve that.
Matt from California, Temecula, California.
Well, Matt, done on the pronunciation there.
Thank you.
Not
thank
on
you.
Matt, that's easy, thank but on Temecula.
We got some West Coast presence in this podcast.
Absolutely we do, representing.
With so many injuries, it's amazing we finished 8-8. Don't worry, the sun will rise in Minnesota again. My focus is now on the draft. So Matt's focused on the draft.
He is.
I think we need to draft at least three offensive linemen. Also, considering Adrian's contract, I believe we need a stud running back, possibly a third rounder if one's available. Deontay Foreman from Texas or Samaje Perine from Oklahoma would be fantastic fits for our Vikings. What are your thoughts, Wavi?
Love the names that he threw out there. Admittedly, I don't know who they are. I couldn't pick them out in a two-person lineup with Bozo the Clown. and so we'll get to know those players more as we get closer to the draft. I'm not, with or without Adrian, I'm not opposed to drafting a running back this year. The third round might be a little high for my liking, but I am against drafting for need. You draft the best player available, so if you're on the clock in the third round and a running back is head and shoulders the best player there, I think you do yourself a service by taking the best available player. And so I'm not against drafting a running back. We'll see what happens. It wouldn't surprise me. But that'll be something to watch this offseason, too, is the deal with Adrian and what happens with him. So, I think our man Matt hit on some key points. And we do need to address the offensive line. Three draft picks might be a little heavy, but we do have eight picks right now. And we know Rick Spielman. He likes to trade, and he likes to end up with 10 or more. So maybe three is the right number.
All right. Wabi, I'm going to break some news to you.
Yeah.
We're not in the playoffs.
No, we're not. Other teams are, though.
But that gives us the opportunity to talk objectively.
Yes.
And very concisely about playoff matchups this week.
Right. We can pick a team to win and, by definition, pick a team to lose without worrying about giving the losing team bulletin board material for when they play us, because we're not playing any more games this season.
And it's hard to put podcasts on bulletin boards.
It is. Yes, it is.
I've not tried it, but I don't know that that'd be a tough thing to do.
The Wobcast has learned it cannot be stuck on a bulletin board. Right.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
You're so pragmatic and practical, Nate.
Someone's got to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So what's the first game you're excited to watch this weekend?
There are four, of course, and I have them in order here. The game I'm most excited to watch is probably Green Bay Dallas.
Okay.
Because I'm going to be rooting like hell for Dallas to win. but I also am excited for Pittsburgh Kansas City, because I think that's a great matchup. I think there are four great games. We'll talk about all four, and we're each going to pick winners. All right?
Okay.
We'll go in the order that they will be played.
That being said, we'll start with Seattle at Atlanta on Saturday, 3:30 on Fox.
Atlanta's the number one scoring team in the NFL.
They are.
Like 34 or some points a game. And so I think if they play to their regular season level, I don't think Seattle can get to 35 points in this game. But now Seattle's really good defensively, and Seattle already beat Atlanta. They did beat him in Seattle without Cam Chancellor. So they will have Cam this week, but they're on the road and they're without Earl Thomas. They had Earl when they beat Atlanta. So great game here. I expect it to be a close game going into the fourth quarter, but I don't think Seattle can score with Atlanta. So my gut tells me Atlanta, and I'm going to stick with that, and I'm going to say Atlanta will win this game.
Ah, interesting. I'm going to go with Seattle.
All right.
Mostly because, you know, they've done this before.
Yeah.
In very recent history. They do it almost every year.
There's something to be said for that. Also, they found a little running game last week against Detroit.
Yeah,
with Rawls.
So dealing with a few injuries, running back position, they finally got a little bit of the running game going.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they'll try to nail that home. And like I said, they've done this before. So they know how to win in the playoffs.
They do. And they're going to go out there on Friday. You know, they go out early. They're going to be settled into Hotlanta. And they're the underdogs. And so they're going to love that. They're like, hey, we're the Seahawks. We win the NFC on a regular basis, and we're underdogs in this playoff game. Okay. So there is that.
And I remember, I think it was Seattle at Atlanta a couple of years ago in the playoffs. It was one of the great games.
Yeah.
There were a lot of great games that year.
Yeah, and I think this will be a good game.
Yeah.
If I had to rank like my confidence level in these four games, I picked Atlanta, but Atlanta would not be number one or number two on my confidence scale.
What I'm guessing might be number one on your confidence scale is the next game we're going to talk about. Houston at New England, Saturday night on CBS. Try to convince me to take Houston over New England.
Well, I was listening to the radio on my drive-in, and Mark Domenech, a former GM in the NFL of the Buccaneers, I believe, was asked, give me the scenario in which Houston wins this game. Like, just what would have to happen? He said, zero turnovers for Houston and 100 rushing yards for Lamar Miller. I think that even that, Houston would be hard-pressed to win this game.
Yeah.
New England, I think, will win this game. Now, if you're a betting man, which we can't be and we aren't, the intriguing part here is they're 16-point underdogs, Houston is. So you could take the points in Houston and have a chance to win. But straight up in this game, I just don't see Houston going in there and winning. There are tons of cool subplots to this game. Bill O'Brien used to work for Bill Belichick. Now he's the head coach for Houston. Houston at New England in the playoffs is cool. Houston went to New England earlier in the year and got shut out. So lots of cool like subplots to this thing. But I see New England winning.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have a lot much more to talk about for that game.
Right. That's number one in the confidence.
I've learned not to really doubt Touchdown Tom and Bill Belichick.
Right.
So until further notice, you're kind of stuck with going with them.
Right.
All right. Pittsburgh at Kansas City. You mentioned this game a little bit earlier. What intrigues you about this matchup?
Again, lots of subplots to this game. These two teams played each other already this year. Pittsburgh won. First play of the game, I believe, or first drive, was a long pass to Darius Heyward-Bey for a touchdown over Marcus Peters. Todd Haley is the Steelers' offensive coordinator.
That game was not close, by the way.
No, it was not. Used to be the head coach in Kansas City. Here's one angle of this game, and I don't mean to steal all your takes because I'm sure you have a bunch because you're very familiar with Kansas City.
I am.
Andy Reid off of a bye, elite.
Yes.
Like never
playoffs
loses.
And regular season.
Never loses after a bye. I think one time in his career, something like that. My gut goes Pittsburgh, but Kansas City at home, really tough, and Kansas City off a bye, really tough. So this is also low on the confidence scale, but I'm leaning Pittsburgh.
I do have an interesting stat that I saw on Twitter, so it's guaranteed 100% correct.
Okay. Twitter's never wrong, right?
Yeah, never overreacting.
Yeah.
But an interesting stat, you're right about Kansas City and the home field advantage that they have.
So good there.
It's a cool environment to play a game, especially if you're a member of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes, right.
But in the playoffs, as of recently, I think it's like 2-4 in their last six home games.
Yeah.
So and it's been a while since they've had a lot of home playoff games. So you know that probably doesn't really matter. So maybe home field advantage during the regular season is different than home field advantage during the playoffs. Maybe it's not. For Chiefs fans, it's been a fun season. It's been a crazy season, sort of the opposite of ours. They've had a lot of, I won't call them lucky breaks, but a lot of things go their way.
Yeah.
Kind of like we had a few last year.
And we
ended up in the playoffs.
We're 4-2 in games decided by six points or less.
Right.
I like the Chiefs Vox, by the way. Their play-by-play guy.
Holtis.
What's his name?
Mitch Holtis.
Like him a lot. I think he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good. He knows. Vikings fans probably don't care about any of this, but he has the most random knowledge of, like, he knows like every small town in the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah, like from the boundary waters all the way down to like the tip of Texas. Like he knows every town.
I wonder if he knows Waseca, Minnesota.
I'm sure he does.
That's awesome.
I'm 98%.
I hope
sure.
We play him in the preseason. I'm going to quiz him on that.
Yeah.
What up, Mitch?
Yeah.
Tell me about Waseca.
Yeah, he'll shut you down.
All right, cool. This game, best chance to be a close game, in my opinion, is this one, Kansas City-Pittsburgh.
I think it'll be a fun game, too.
Me too. Can't wait to watch it.
So who do you pick?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. I think I'm with you.
Okay.
I think I'm with you. For some of the same reasons, I went with Seattle. Pittsburgh's
been
done
there.
It before. Yeah. They know how to win in the playoffs. Not that Andy Reid and the Chiefs don't, but I think Pittsburgh's tough to beat right now.
Okay.
Finally, your favorite team, the Green Bay Packers, and your second favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
One
of those is true, by the way.
Dallas guy.
I like Dallas, yeah. Admittedly, it's a little more about Tony Romo than it is the Cowboys. Like, I really liked watching Kobe Bryant, so I would find myself rooting for the Lakers for the last 15 years. Now I really don't pay attention to the Lakers because Kobe doesn't play. Maybe I'll be that way with the Cowboys when Romo leaves, whenever that is, but Romo is there. And so I want Romo to have success. Anyway.
Gotcha.
Okay.
But this game.
Yes.
Tony Romo is probably not going to play very much.
Yeah. If he doesn't, it's bad news for the Cowboys because it means Dak got hurt.
Although he did look good in the whatever, how many snaps he played.
Touchdown drive. You kidding me? Yeah.
Anyway, Green Bay at Dallas. What do you think? Should be another great game.
It should be, and we could talk about this game for an hour, I think, because it has so many it's such a juicy, meaty game with so many subplots and angles to take, and there's no way in his current form I'm picking against Aaron Rodgers right now.
That'd be tough to do.
And it's Cowboys offensive line, and it's Ezekiel Elliott, and it's Dez Bryant, and it's Packers pass defense, and Packers injuries, and all these things. Not everything, though, is weighted equally when you analyze a matchup. And the quarterback position is the highest weighted aspect of a matchup. And Rodgers is peak Aaron Rodgers right now. This is when the Packers were 15-1, Rodgers was not playing this well. This is Rodgers at his best. No way I'm picking against him when he's playing at his best. I need to be proven wrong before I pick against the Packers. Now, we're in the playoffs, so if I'm proven wrong, I can't pick against the Packers because they'll be eliminated. But in this game, I'm picking Green Bay.
I'm with you.
And I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah. The Wobcast, the Vikings podcast, and we both picked the Packers to beat the Cowboys.
I loathe the Packers winning. And so maybe I'm emotional and it's causing me to pick them to like reverse jinx myself. But I see this being a close game. And I think Dallas will try and control the game with their offense and their running game and limit Green Bay's possessions. And that can happen. But I think with the way Green Bay is playing, specifically Rodgers and the offense, it's just too tough for me to pick against it.
All right. Some big games this weekend.
Yeah.
The playoffs. That's what happens. You get big games in the playoffs.
All the home teams won and covered the spread as favorites last week.
Interesting.
That will not happen this week.
Yeah, probably not.
You're going to see upsets. You're going to see close games. You might see an overtime game. And it's going to be a wild weekend of divisional football. Can't wait for it.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Just like this was fun.
This was fun.
Yeah.
This was good.
And now it's over with. It's done. We have nothing more to talk about in this edition of the Wobcast. We said last week that we would have Craig Peters in to preview the Senior Bowl.
We lied.
I kind of was just going off the cuff, so to speak, about that, and it turns out we lied. So we'll bring him in next week, though, because he's going to the Senior Bowl the week after next, so we should have him in.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So we'll bring in Craig Peters next week to talk about the Senior Bowl. We'll talk about some other stuff. Oh, yeah, I wanted to mention George Edwards. Our defensive coordinator is coaching in the East-West Shrine Game, which is happening in a couple of weeks, I believe in Orlando. That's where it's been in the past. I think it is again this year. He's coaching the West team. So our defensive coordinator will be the head coach in the East-West Shrine Game later this month. The coaches are chosen by a committee. They try and select some promising or up-and-coming assistant coaches in the league, put them in a position to be a head coach to give them some experience. So congrats to George Edwards for being selected. We wish him luck in the East-West Shrine Game. And, hey, George, find some good players for us, man.
Yep. And, I'm a big fan of the West team this year.
Me too. I've always liked the West team in the East-West Shrine Game.
Yep.
All right, that's it. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you, Wobby.
Yeah, man. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the games, everyone. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Wobcast. Click around the website. We have tons of great content up there right now. And we're going to be back next week with another edition of the Wobcast. Until then, so long. So